Welkom bij een nieuwe aflevering van de Nederlandse Kubernetes podcast. De podcast over Kubernetes voor iedereen.
Ik ben de gastheer Ronald Kers en ik zit zoals altijd met...
Hallo Ronald.
De enige echte Jan Stompers. Welkom Jan.
Welkom Ronald. We zitten nu, het is de eerste op KubeCon.
De eerste op KubeCon, ja. Ja, alweer een jaar verder. En ja. Het gaat hard hè.
Is in het mooie Frankrijk.
Mooie Frankrijk, Parijs, met mooie mensen.
Ja. Nou, ja, we hebben ook twee gasten tegenover ons zitten.
Jo. Ja, well, I would like to introduce Jenny Bartsch and Enrico Bartsch. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello, thanks for having us here.
Great. Hey, thanks.
Yeah, great to have you. And can you please introduce yourself to our listeners, Jenny?
Yes, hi, I am Jenny and I am a software developer and graphic designer and a volunteer teacher at schools, bringing computer science, coding and everything about it to the next generation of programmers, coders, and creatives.
Oh, cool. Nice. Enrico.
Yeah, I'm Enrico. I'm a, let's say, consultant around cloud-native technology. I've started my career, I think 2008 with a focus on open-source technology. So my way was Linux and all the stuff around it. And from there, I figured out it's a good thing to be able to, program your own software. I wouldn't consider myself a developer because, most of the things that I do is glue code and hacking things together. but it helps me a lot to be able to do this. And in the past years, I've been teaching cloud native technologies like Kubernetes to people that wanted to start their journey. That's what I currently do.
Hey, nice.
And what kind of languages do you program?
Well, I started back then with PHP,
I'm sorry.
The things that I like the most about it is the thing that people mostly hate about it. I liked that it doesn't have types, that I can have a variable that at one point is a database connection and the next point is a string. that was if you have a look at my desk, it's total chaos, and that's what I liked about PHP. It can be total chaos.
Okay. Hate that.
Yeah, she hates it. She's a total difference. Yeah, yeah.
And what kind of programming language do you like?
Then? I started with PHP as well. JavaScript.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Also.
Then I drifted to front end development because I'm very creative and ditched all of his PHP stuff. So he does the back end stuff and I'm front end things. Yeah, PHP was the main route for me and went down the rabbit hole with all this front end designing. Yeah.
Angular and
this was a kind of after I started drifting more into the graphic design. So Angular, I didn't like all the technical stuff.
Yeah, I think when all the front end frameworks popped up, I think you left the stage of front end development what was it called?
Bootstrap.
Bootstrap was a big thing, and yes. jQuery just jumped onto the market. Yeah. And I think afterwards they started to have all these fully fledged front end development frameworks. Right?
There were kids suddenly.
Also important.
I had to shift my priorities a little bit.
We're here at KubeCon, and you had a lightning talk that piqued our interest. Can you tell us something about what you told in your lightning talk?
I am working with Minecraft education in schools, and I realized there is a need for the children to learn independently on topics they are interested in. But first, I got them interested in technical stuff, computer science, coding, and all about this through Minecraft. They didn't know they like computer science at all until they did some lessons within the game about coding, about using Redstone, the equivalent to...
block programming,
programming.
Nice.
And it woke talents in them and interests in them, especially in girls. And I saw that we had to find a solution bringing all these things in their own language, in German for us, to learn all about this. Downside is there is a lot of information for the children in the internet, but not in their main or mother tongue. So they can't gather this information because there is a language barrier.
Yeah.
So we needed a platform where the children could learn in their own language about how to set up a Minecraft server, how to create mods, how to implement mods into the server.
Oh, that's advanced.
Yeah, it is advanced, but the children are so eager to learn this. It's crazy.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, most of the times we're learning more from the children than the other way around.
Yes.
There's always that one kid that tells me, yeah, you can have like Bedrock and Java edition servers and have a gateway in between them so that both of the editions can play together. And I'm like, what? How? There's this, you have to download this and do that. And there's always that one kid that brings this information to the class. I mean, we're talking about like 8 to 12-year-olds.
Yes.
It's amazing how deep they are into that stuff. And I think most of the things, I mean, I started my career as a systems integrator. So it was always like bringing software and like the operating system together and like make it run, right?
Mm-hmm.
And kids basically are doing this with their environments, and they want to start to dig deeper into the into the core of how it works and how they can manipulate things. How they can trick each other. At least greetings go out to Jasper. He's one of the first students that I had at work. That he had an apprenticeship for IT, and I think he started to go into IT with learning Java, and he did that because he wanted to trick out one of his friends in Minecraft. So he started.
That's a good incentive,
And that's what his motivation was. To learn such things, and we picked that up, and
Minecraft is big because also the biggest vulnerability of last year was discovered in Minecraft.
Yeah,
the Log4j.
Yeah,
that's something people don't. But you said Redstone. How do children learn that, or how do they find their way? Because German children don't talk that good English, I think.
Yeah, that's a big point, and it's annoying.
Yeah, and how because the most of the information, all of the information,
is
also
available in English.
In tech information is all English.
Yeah, and it's a problem, especially in the German education system, because English, it's a thing. We all learn English in school, but just, it's the tip of an iceberg. It's not enough to go deeper.
Okay.
And the kids can't learn about all these things they can do in Minecraft because there's a language barrier. So how do these kids learn about Redstone? Yeah, try and error. But just go into the game and try out.
Okay.
And
that's difficult.
That's very difficult, yes, even for me. And I'm speaking.
Because the Redstone it's not intuitive.
No, it's
counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's very. I'm my Minecraft guy, and I'm a technical. Yeah. I'm built just farms for everything.
like my students.
I'm really excited about the new version with the autocrafter.
Yeah.
But it's. Something not for you, Ronald. But
I only built underground castles and caves and that kind of stuff, you know. So I'm not touching the redstone yet.
Yeah, but redstone is
more creative one.
I'm playing with the family. I've got my own Minecraft server. My son plays, my daughter plays, and I play also because it's challenging.
Yeah,
it is on different levels.
Yeah, on different levels.
Yeah,
that's.
I think our kids started with basic tutorials on YouTube. And they there are a couple content creators that do this in German and explain very well, but it for the more complex things there's not much content.
No, but even the German content creators do English because I follow some and they're doing English podcasts.
What I experienced
YouTube.
Was that all this content in German is not tailored for children.
Oh no,
it's too high level. Of language, so the kids can't understand.
It's more too technical, basically.
It's too technical, yes.
They don't have anything to relate with. When we're talking about different kinds of architectures of infrastructure, we have something that we can relate to. A kid that doesn't know like how an enterprise looks like or what a programming language is and how all these
the logic
work.
Behind it.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you don't have anything to relate to, you have to do this in a language that
pictures.
And with pictures and with stories that they can relate to.
Hands on, right? Showing what you're doing here. Yeah.
But if you want to have your kid in IT, Give them Minecraft.
Give them Minecraft. Yeah. I talked prior to the Lightning Talk yesterday. There were sitting guys behind me who said, yeah, you have a Minecraft girl. Yeah, nice. I started coding with Minecraft. Okay, you backed up my theory that we need more Minecraft in school to bring the next generation of developers and so on. It's a thing.
Yeah,
we need
cool.
more of it.
And is there a difference between the main version and the education version?
First of all, it integrates into the Microsoft Active Directory structure, and it's all I mean, if you have the main game, and we're talking about the Bedrock edition here, yeah. So the Minecraft Windows edition, or what you have find on the portable consoles or PlayStation or something like this, and that's not the old original Java edition. So we're talking about Bedrock here.
Yes.
And if you have that, maybe on your phone or on your console, you will see that you have these things called mine coins that you can shop in a grocery store, or you're giving like real money into a in-game currency that you can exchange for maps and other kinds of digital items.
Yeah, and you don't need that in Minecraft education. Yeah. It's more secure for them because they don't need their own accounts. They don't have to put their own real names into the game. They don't have to register somewhere. I just give them the licenses, access, and then they can
play.
Nice. We don't have to pay money. We couldn't pay money in any way. And there are a ton of pre-made lessons from Minecraft Education.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
In English.
In English. Most of them are in English. They are working on solutions and translating some office maps and lessons. Something I'm don't get tired about nagging is that the developers of Minecraft Education always say, yeah, we have an immersive reader, the kids can translate it in this reader, but I say they need this information in their own language. Most of them can't read in their mother tongue, so provide it in their mother tongue to learn all this stuff.
Yeah.
So,
that's why we have a Dutch podcast.
Yeah, talking English.
Talking English.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah. It's more secure. The kids can only play with their student colleagues. No.
It's like if you have this from the perspective of the Azure Active Directory, all of the accounts reside in a domain, and that domain is usually your school or the company that hosts all this. So there is no possibility to join private hosted servers on the internet. The only thing that you can do is play together with people on the same domain. Basically.
Oh, that's awesome! If somebody wants to. Do this also?
Yeah.
Or can they contact you, or is that open?
Oh, sure. Please do it.
Yeah, we can just drop our LinkedIn in the show notes, and probably people can figure out how to contact us, and we can help them with that. But also, like Microsoft is doing lots of things to enable teachers and schools. There are like different programs that
but focused
it.
On the US at this time.
Yeah. That was amazing. How did you, you had quite some experience. How different the learning systems in the US work in comparison to Germany?
Yeah, I am at this point the only German Minecraft education ambassador because, I don't know, language barrier, I guess, because most of the teachers here, in Germany, can't speak English that well. So they can't access all the information about any program about Minecraft education. So yeah, I attend all these meetings with the ambassador people, and they're talking about magical stuff in school. There are people who are there because they do Minecraft education.
Yeah.
We have to do
That's a job there.
Yeah, it's a job. it's an
job
actual
there.
Job there.
Oh, nice.
And, I'm always like, oh, I'm so jealous. You can have people just for Minecraft in school. And I am fighting as a volunteer about every euro I have to put in every license here. Yeah, there are a lot of differences. And I'm trying to bring Minecraft education.
Really awesome that you're doing that.
But we want to talk about the technical solution. Also, because it's not all about Minecraft education, but it was the reason why we are looking for a solution, bringing information, it don't have to be about Minecraft, but information in general to children.
Bij ACC ICT staat alles in het teken van continuïteit waarborgen voor bedrijfkritische applicaties. Of het nu gaat over Managed OTAP, Cloud en Kubernetes, ze geven hier invulling aan om door samen met hun klanten een toekomstbestendige strategie uit te stippelen voor het gehele proces van ontwikkelen tot en met productie.
We started at some point to give like holiday camps around like Minecraft and all other technical stuff. And as I'm a podcaster myself, and for some reason I also have like the video streaming setup that you need with it, I think maybe let's do a workshop with kids that say what they want to do for a job is become a YouTuber. So yeah. Maybe let's just set this all up and show them how does it work. How do I have to prepare for something? How hard is it to prepare a 5-minute video? Yeah. And what do I have to do before, during, and after recording? Yeah, and stuff like that. So we started to expand this into other different technical challenges where the kids were interested in. And at some point, I think it was for the Chaos Communications Congress in December last year, where I decided to host a workshop for how to host Minecraft servers.
The room was packed.
Yeah, we had like tiny tokens that we handed out to the people that made it to the list, and there were so many disappointed. So we will do this year also, and maybe a second time as well. but it's the thing is. If you are at a conference or even at a conference like here and you have like an open workshop where you want to do technical things, it's people popping up with different devices. So I see you have your laptop here. There might be others just attending with a tablet or with a Chromebook or whatever. And you can't really rely on like having all the requirements that they need to get started into the actual technical detail. We decided to use something different here, and that's something that I brought with me from my experience that I have as a Kubernetes trainer. We've been working very hard on the Hobby Farm project. That's something that was originally found by a couple of folks working at SUSE. There is like Eamon and a couple others that I can't remember, but have a look at GitHub and see all the contributors there. And they started the idea of having a software platform where you have like side-by-side tutorial and your technical environment on this. And as there are like also enterprise solutions for this, like Instruct, you can have this as software as a service, but you have to pay for it, and it's not cheap. And for us as volunteers who have to care about like every euro we spend on this, we wanted to have something that we can self-host and have our own environment that we can just design and whatever we like we would like. So the Hobby Farm project basically is, as SUSE shifted to doing things kind of differently. I mean, they acquired Rancher and doing this acquisition, like many things changed. Even Eamon is not working there anymore. Started his career, I think, last year at Red Hat. So, but having like a software that runs or that rolls our technical environments so that others can have their tutorials to start with it is something that we, as a company that I work for, need a lot. So we have, I think, 4 people kind of full time working on the open source project and to make it.
How does it? You've got like a new your learning environment, and then beside that, there the tutorial.
Yeah.
It's just like the Instruct.
It can be just like Instruct, but it can be also more. I mean, it starts with from the perspective of a learner. I'm having a login page and I'm registering there, and I have a pre-shared access token. And this access token allows me to access whatever material the admin provided me for this access code. And that's basically it. You click on it, you get your environment spun up, and then you can go through the tutorial, and we can decide how long the people will be able to see this or how long the virtual machines behind it are actually running. So in the case of a Minecraft server workshop, we told the kids, you can start this and the server will be up the next 7 days after you leave the workshop. setup so that they can play with their friends. But it's not for permanent. I mean, we're not sponsoring like 100 Minecraft servers to random kids.
Money.
It's most,
maybe yeah. after this.
And this is running in Kubernetes.
Yeah, Hobby Farm itself is Kubernetes native, so there is no like database or anything in it. It basically runs against the API server. Mm-hmm. Everything is implemented in CRDs and controllers that we use. It couldn't live without Kubernetes.
And if you spin up like a Minecraft tutorial,
yeah.
do you spin then pods with Minecraft in there? Or do you spin up virtual machines really from Kubernetes? And how do you do that?
It depends on whatever you would like to do. When we're starting with,
Minecraft is really stateful.
It so. Is, yeah. That's why it has to stay there for a period of time so that the kids can even play with it and the workload itself is stateful. Even the application is stateful. The content that we have in it, the users that we have in it, the scenarios that we create, all this is stateful, but we are not storing this in a separate database. We're just using etcd and using CRDs to store our information in this, and that scales pretty well.
Okay, but you're storing information in CRDs?
Yeah.
Is the etcd database not going to be really, really big?
It is. And that's something
that affects that Kubernetes then?
At some point, it can. You really have to, depends on what are you targeting. If we're talking about classroom setups with 20 to 50 or even 100 people, I would say you can even go with K3S and the SQLite embedded thing. But if you have like lots of parallel users, talking about like starting from 200 to a couple thousand, then you really need to think about what you're doing with the etcd there. So I would suggest having like at least 3 master nodes. Mm-hmm. And if you have too much load on there, I would even exclude the etcd role to dedicated nodes providing this. And obviously they need like fast storage. Yeah.
Well, but that's really awesome because then the Hobby Farm is really built in. It's yeah. part of Kubernetes.
Yeah, totally. We also had like a couple of problems with that, obviously. Right? Yeah. So we started. The Hobby Farm project was funded at a point where I think they were using what was the thing before Instruct? Katacoda. Yeah, I think Katacoda. And Katacoda was acquired by O'Reilly, and after O'Reilly acquired it, there was no enterprise offering anymore. And even before, the enterprise offering was pretty expensive, and all the competitors at the time were even more expensive. So they figured out, having like a tutorial and a shell side by side together, that should be like too hard. So they figured out everything they had about, I think it's the front end is Angular, the back end is Go. They hacked this together, I think, on a weekend or something to get the basics of it to work. And since then, we had lots and lots and lots of changes to the platform. So it's not Hobby Farm is not the same as it was like 2 years ago. But yeah, if you want to scale up to a couple thousand users, you need to take care about etcd. And also, like in the past, we were polling the API server every couple seconds to see if there is a change to a resource. Obviously, we did this before informers were a thing. And you might have asked yourself, like 2 years ago, why don't we use a message queue? Yeah.
Live and learn.
And also, like the main backend servers, we kindly called it Gargantua. because it was basically a gigantic monolith in that whole infrastructure. And during the last 12 months, I think, we chopped Gargantua down to a couple of microservices running independent from each other. Because, in the past, you had like lots of load on Gargantua, but mm-hmm. you can't really figure out what was the real reason why Gargantua was kind of under full load. So you just scaled it up, and that at some point blew up. Yeah.
So back to like the Minecraft. Are you running then full servers, or are they running pods
for the actual trainings environment? So one thing is the platform itself that runs on Kubernetes, that runs on CRDs, but it has different environments that you can have, and those environments are basically some infrastructure as a service providers. The easiest way.
AWS or
AWS,
Azure?
Google, Azure, Hetzner, DigitalOcean, whatever you would like. As we have to be conservative about money. It's for most of the cases Hetzner that we use because they're damn cheap. it is, and they're good, right? So we use that, and there is a controller residing in the cluster that listens to different kinds of events for creating virtual environments. Yeah. And that the easiest way to do this is using Terraform, and you can just have your own Terraform module with your cloud provider and set this all up. Problem with that is Terraform is not perfect, and there are situations where it might fail, and stuff like
of
that.
Course.
So when using the Terraform controller, please also implement like cleanup tasks every couple of months or weeks that cleans up everything that couldn't be deleted for whatever reason. The other way you could do is, besides Terraform controllers, we have an interface where you have your own controller that you can set up. I mean, writing the code for AWS to implement, like, creating a virtual machine and exchanging an SSH key is not that hard. I mean, I'm not a Go developer myself, but I can do it. So it's not too different.
Do you have also controllers like for VMware or for Proxmox KVM?
For VMware, we are using Terraform. The same applies for whatever are we, I think Hetzner, DigitalOcean has its own controller, AWS has its own controller, the Rancher Force created one for Rancher VM, so that's working. I implemented Proxmox with Terraform, and KVM, I believe, is not yet included.
It's a bit Proxmox.
Yeah, I've been working with LXD in the past. Oh, yeah. There was something. Yeah, a couple guys of me were going to FOSDEM, I think, this year, and they discovered there's like a UI and all that stuff around LXD. So I figured this might be interesting, and also it's like for something where you just need like a Python environment or something. You don't need a fully fledged virtual machine.
No, you can use do that in pods.
Yeah.
So you're managing also pods.
We are learning.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So you can have different kinds of,
Is it easy to make your own learning environment? So if I want to, for example, do a Kubernetes CKE learning environment, is that easy to set up?
If you are familiar with writing things in Markdown, then that's all you need for the content perspective.
Okay.
We also have like a something included for charts. I can't recall the framework that we're using currently, but we extended the Markdown syntax by a couple of things and items, like collapsible items, or we have code blocks that, if you click them, will directly be executed on the shell. And if you want to have like nested code blocks in collapsible items and stuff like that, that's something that Markdown obviously doesn't care about.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, so there's a reference. You find a documentation on all the different items that you can use in HobbyFarm, and that's basically how you write down your content. If you're doing this just for your own, you can do this right in the backend and have it all there. But if you're working there with a group of people, I would highly suggest to use the CLI tools in a CI/CD manner, so that you can have a GitLab or whatever repository, and use your regular flow and then have it rolled out. I mean, at the end, the scenarios and all the choruses and stuff like this are also CRDs, so you can convert the Markdown to the matching Kubernetes spec and apply that to your cluster. So that's how the content perspective works.
Okay, and is there a marketplace already for pre-made content?
No.
Is there going to be a marketplace for pre-made content?
It's the aim.
I wouldn't say that it's the aim currently. I mean, I'm working at a systems integrator that our service is basically to go to companies and teach them how to do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Our main key value is the actual content, not the platform itself. The platform is something that we do open source. We thought about having things like this, having a marketplace, and I'm pretty if you look at the things that the guys at CodeCloud did, it's amazing what kind of job they did in the marketplace and the peer review kind of stuff. That's something that is not in focus for us currently, but as it's on GitHub and open source, and we're still searching for contributors, if there is someone out there that might want to build a shop or marketplace for content creators and content consumers, feel free to do so. Feel free to use it. Feel free to raise a PR and work together with us on this.
Oh, that's a great shout out.
So, looking at the time, we...
I'm sorry.
No. I'm having too much fun.
There are a lot of questions that we can still ask, but maybe we can do another podcast in the future, because sure. I think there is a lot of stuff to talk about. Also, the Minecraft education thing is piqued my interest. Our final question is normally, if you have a crystal ball here on the table, we should buy a crystal ball, really,
yeah.
Because we always use that anecdote.
Yeah.
How do you see the future of Kubernetes? And maybe in combination with Minecraft education...
And hobby farm,
and hobby farm, yeah, sure, of course.
You have to answer this because I don't know.
So that's something that I have to ask myself a lot also, because, I mean, we're working with different vendors that have strategies and buy each other and stuff like that. So that's a consolidating market that we see here. If I take the things from the past and project them in the future, I would say we're not far away from not just managing like pods and containers on Kubernetes. And I see maybe containers wouldn't be like the best practice anymore. I mean, there's stuff like WebAssembly out there. We are already managing virtual machines with it using KubeVirt. So I believe the things that we did with Hobby Farm, like extending the API and using it for things that probably no one in the Kubernetes like core team thought about that you could manage it with them, is something that others will adopt. Because the main core of it, the API server, all the contracts, the things with policy management and IAM and stuff like that, that's so robust and built to scale that you can just hop on it and bring your own use case to it. And I think there will be lots of more software and other things that we could manage with Kubernetes. So maybe containers go away, but I think and hope that Kubernetes sticks for a while.
Cool.
What do you say?
Very nice.
Do you have any other insights?
No, actually, I don't. I hope that we, from the educational perspective, I hope that we find ways to bring all this new and fantastic stuff to the next generation. This is my wish for the future.
Yeah.
Enable the next generation to use all this crazy stuff.
Let's make it less complicated.
Yeah, make it less complicated so I could use it.
Yeah. And me too.
Thank you.
Jenny and Enrico, thank you so much for taking your time to have a chat with us about all the great things you're doing, and we're going to follow you with great interest.
Thank you.
Future. Hope to have you back
thank
in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, see ya.
See ya.
Deze podcast is een initiatief van ACC ICT en wij zijn te beluisteren op onze website k8spodcast.nl via Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast en alle andere favoriete podcastproviders.